From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of October 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll check the agricultural news and we'll discuss the cash grain market too. That with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, and you are part of the reason we're public. It's your funding that helps us make programming like this one possible. Right now would be a great time to let us know that we're doing a good job. 217-244-9455 is the number to call in with your pledge of financial support for the agricultural programming that comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, or you can go online at willpledge.org. We're in our last day of the fund drive, so don't wait. Do it right now. And today is the day. It's really important to do it. 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. I like the $120 level. Less is great. More is fantastic. Whatever you'd like to give, as long as you give. And do be sure that when you talk to somebody, you tell them you're pledging in support of agriculture. They'll write that down and we'll see it at the radio station. Or you can put it in the comments section online at willpledge.org. Just make sure you tell them in support of agriculture. 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. This is the last day. Don't wait. Dial in right now if you're listening after the fact online. Hey, those phone numbers are good any time of the year and the day, especially the willpledge.org website. Gosh, you can go there anytime you'd like. In fact, if you want to go there and make sure that you're a sustainer and just do this once a month off your credit card, say at 10 bucks a month, that'd be a great way to make a donation in support of agriculture. Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday. December contract in the corn up a penny at $3.88¾. March at $4.75, a penny higher in the July contract at $4.08½, up 1¼. Next year's December, 3/4 higher at $4.05½. November beans down to $9.11¾, the settlement price. January at $9.26, off a penny and 3/4. The July down 1¾ at $9.54¾. November soybeans next year, $9.61, down a penny and 3/4. The bean oil up 74 cents on the settlement price. Bean meal down $2.30. Wheat futures July contract soft red at $5.06¼, up a quarter, and the July hard red up 1½ at $4.39½. Live cattle futures up 75 cents in the October at $106.80 100 pounds, and the feeder cattle 27½ higher at $142.35. Lean hogs up 22½ cents at $62.42½. The crude oil down 18 cents, ethanol 3/10 lower, heating oil or diesel fuel up 4/10, and gasoline 0.8 cents higher, natural gas up 0.8¢ for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 130 points higher. The dollar is now trading down 0.154 at 98.535, and gold futures up $5.60. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at this marketplace and talk about the month of September and how that ended up on the charts as well. Hey, Dan, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it. How are things down in Waco, Texas today?
We're still hot. We're still in the 90s. I think by the end of next week, we may see some 80s at some highs. So it's finally getting time to cool off a little bit. I mean, our October is supposed to be kind of like the Illinois September, but you guys were hot in September. So, it's still hot, but you know, it's going to start cooling off here, I think, by the end of next week anyway.
Three important things happened on Monday. It was the last day of the month. Corn posted a key reversal to the upside. You tweeted about that one, and that was involved with the grain stocks number, which showed a whole lot less grain around for both corn and soybeans than most had expected. Where would you like to start today?
Well, we can start with that key reversal, and we kind of talked about this earlier in September, because when we were during the first week of September, corn futures were making, or first week of August, let's put it that. No, that'd be September. Yeah, the first week of September, we were making lower lows. And you mentioned that I always kind of comment, I always kind of watch what we do during the first few days of the month, and because that kind of sets us up for maybe a reversal, whether that's up or down, toward the end of the month. And since we were making lower lows, at least on individual contract basis, that was setting us up for maybe a monthly reversal. But of course, you know, September always has that quarterly stocks report, and that has a big say in how the market closes for the month. But see, September is, you know, what's really interesting. Now, we ended up closing sharply higher for the month of September because of the government report. But the other thing is that September is one of those seasonal months that 85% of the time, I suppose somebody could maybe argue with me, it might be 84.5 or 86.5, but most of the time it closes lower for the month. So corn was able to go against its seasonal trend and close higher. Now, you continue that seasonality. Corn is kind of debatable. Corn starts leveling out in October. Corn has two strong up. Either you have an up in October and that carries you on into the next spring, or a lot of times corn will maybe track sideways until you kind of get in toward December deliveries and then it turns up. But seasonally, if you look at it on averages, corn and soybeans both make seasonal lows during the month of October, and then they have a strong tendency then to strengthen as you go on into the planting season and next year's growing season. So the fact that corn was able to go against the seasonality of closing lower and instead closing higher, now when we're into October and the seasonals are to the upside, it's going to be easier for corn to rally, provided the information that comes toward the corn market is going to be price friendly. And of course, the big first step here is going to be next week's October crop report and whether or not USDA does any acreage changes, yield changes, harvested acreage changes. I mean, this October crop report could go about either way. And it'll be interesting to see what USDA does with it, because everything's a month behind. And I'm sure that's going to complicate some of USDA's juggling of the numbers, or it's going to make them maybe a little uneasy with it because everything's a whole month behind. And we really haven't got that much harvest has taken place for this October crop report, because they usually have a lot of harvest yield samples and that kind of stuff to kind of calculate in, and I'm not sure they're going to have a complete set of numbers for that. So maybe a lot of the juggling may wait until the November report. We'll just have to kind of wait and see on that. But these 300 million bushels of corn that disappeared or didn't show up in the stocks report, I mean that obviously tells me that USDA overstated last year's crop, but they're not going to admit that, and that I think is a problem for USDA. They're just going to throw it into the feed, seed, and residual, and I think that doesn't do USDA any good as far as people having confidence in their reports, because they had to do it in beans. And if they overstated it on beans, and it sure looks like, you know, the odds are pretty good that their methodology probably overstated the corn yield, and they should make an adjustment to that rather than just throw it into the feed, seed, and residual, because that, you know, that I think has people lose confidence in some of USDA's reporting. But the problem with this is that I think the December report, which will be released in January, along with the January final, could be an absolute mess. I think there could be all kinds of cross currents on that report, and a lot of that will probably depend upon how much corn or soybeans is still in the field when USDA is doing that survey for the first part of December. So that if we have a lot of crop that's still in the field, then that December 1st stocks number on both corn and soybeans, and the final production number could be highly questionable. Let's put it that way. So, but this September number is a pretty clean number because there's not much harvest activity took place in the Midwest. So it's a should be a pretty clean number. It's not going to be exact. I'm sure it's off a few bushels, but it's pretty clean. But I think their December 1st number now is just going to push it back, and it could get and USDA could end up finding 300 million bushels of corn on that report in January. So the way my cyclicals are set up, I would tell you the way my cyclicals are leaning, at least at this point, is that this market finds support. It gradually grinds higher, maybe as we go in toward the end of the year. And if it does, that may be some selling opportunities, or at least opportunities to put some downside price risk in place prior to that January crop report that, like I said, at this point, my guess is it could be messy. It could show it could show almost anything. And of course, a lot of that will depend upon how far along harvest we are by December 1st.
Yeah. So just to summarize that again, grain stocks report last week, missing some 300 million bushels of corn. You're thinking that when the next stocks report comes out, and it won't be until we get to the January 12 or thereabouts, I don't know what day it is this year, final USDA report day, and it'll have the December 1 grain stocks number in it. That one could be messy, and your expectation is that there could be quite a few changes in WASDE, and if you had your preference, the one that's coming up for this next week for the month of October, they'd go back and change yield or something else for corn in that report to adjust last year to make that 300 million bushels look more accurate from a looking back sort of perspective.
As a rule, they won't mess with the corn yield.
Yeah.
They do on beans because they have to, because bean is an exact number. You either crush it or export it. But on corn, they throw it into feed, seed, and residual means unexplained disappearance,
right,
basically. And I think rather than have them do that, I think they need to do the yield adjustment also, but they're not going to do that. I mean, they have not historically done that, and I think it would give them more credibility if they actually would do a yield change, but they're not going to do that. I know that, you know, they just keep covering up those mistakes. And I mean, we've had mistakes in that corn market for ever since I've been in the business, a whole career of it, is because they keep covering it up with feed, seed, and residual. Residual is anybody's guess. That's just unexplained disappearance. And that's how they're going to explain that 300 million bushels, is this unexplained disappearance. I think they should attempt to try to explain it by lowering the yield, but they're not going to do that. They never have, and nothing tells me that they're going to change it. But I think it would give them more credibility if they would, I think. Let's put it that way.
Hey, I'll talk to you again about 3 o'clock this afternoon when we record Commodity Week today. Thanks so much for being with me.
Very well, Todd.
That is Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Quick thing about those USDA grain stocks reports. The reason the feed and residual is there, as Dan knows, is that it does part of this explanation part. At the end of the year, there's no good way to really tally all of the corn bushels that are around because so many of them are actually fed to livestock, and that goes right off of the farm into livestock, so they only have a way to track it. On the other hand, all the soybeans come off the farm, and they are tracked, and they end up with some numbers that give them actual figures, so that's why they're able to go back and adjust acreage and yield and such things on soybeans at the end of the year. Now, don't forget that right now, we're in the middle of our fall fund drive. Actually, we're at the end of it last day. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with trade. It's quite likely President Donald Trump earlier today complicated trade negotiations with China when he suggested that nation investigate one of his political rivals.
China should start an investigation into the Bidens, because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine.
Just prior to making these comments, the president was discussing progress on negotiations with Beijing and a possible trade agreement, in which he said, if they don't do what we want, we have tremendous power. Chinese officials will be in Washington next week in another attempt to revive the stalled talks. We'll stay with the president for just a moment. The Trump administration is expected to announce details on a U.S. biofuels deal to help farmers by Friday. The announcement comes after weeks of discussions between the White House and farm and oil state senators, oil refining executives, and biofuels officials. In August, Mr. Trump promised a giant package related to ethanol after his administration granted some 31 oil refiners exemptions to biofuels blending mandates, outraging farmers and ethanol producers. It's not exactly clear where that deal will land. Senate Finance Chair Chuck Grassley says he thought he had a deal with Mr. Trump to fix the waiver damage and give ethanol and corn growers the 15 billion gallons promised under the RFS.
So 15 billion gallons ought to be 15 billion gallons. In other words, let's either do our job or get off the pot. In other words, let's call this thing to an end. The EPA ought to put this down on paper and get it out. This is hurting the president more in Iowa than even the China debate.
Grassley complains that instead the administration was still entertaining oil industry proposals to grant caps or rebates of ethanol credits, known as RINs. House Agriculture Committee Chair Colin Peterson does not see a deal coming that satisfies both sides. And he has introduced legislation.
And so what this bill does is it requires them to notify us, the Congress, on the waivers and why, you know, the basis for which they're giving them. We're also wanting them to reallocate these gallons that were lost on the waiver situation.
Instead of 15 billion gallons, Peterson says waived volumes have reduced the total to 13.6 billion gallons, not accounting for losses in earlier years. President's June approval of year-round E15 sales will add some 50 million gallons in the first year. Well, let's come right back here to the home state, where Deere and Company this week announced indefinite layoffs amid demand woes. Deere officials say more than 160 U.S. workers at agriculture machinery facilities in Illinois and Iowa will be laid off after the company last week announced it would reduce production by 20%. Reuters says Deere, the world's largest farm equipment maker, is reeling from the fallout of the U.S.-China trade war that has slowed purchases from farmers. The layoffs include roughly 50 workers at the Harvester Works facility in East Moline, Illinois, and more than 100 workers at the Davenport Works facility in Davenport, Iowa. Deere also lowered its income forecast to $3.2 billion in August. And finally today, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce continues its pressure for Congress to pass the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. In a letter to all House of Representative members, the organization says the U.S. cannot afford for an enactment of USMCA to fall by the wayside. The letter coins the term "no rest recess" in calling on lawmakers to pass the agreement following the current two-week recess. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather is out of the office this afternoon. Here's an update of some of the forecast for the grain-producing regions of the United States. Des Moines, Iowa today, a high of 59. They'll see sunshine today and tomorrow, but only be in the 60s through a good portion of the end of this week and the beginning of next week. There is a little light rain scheduled for Saturday. Their lows down in that 47 to 51 degree range, maybe as low as 39 on Friday night. Springfield, Illinois, possibly a rain shower at points during the day today, 75 for the high. That's right in the middle of the state of Illinois, 65 tomorrow, 68, maybe a little rain on Saturday, 67, 66, 69. So, well, not so bad for the rest of the beginning of next week, and the lows in the mid-40s through that time period. Should see some sunshine as well. The number three corn-producing state in the nation is Nebraska. They're 56 degrees and rising right right now. Should go to about 60 today, drop down to 46 tonight. They have rain in the forecast for Friday and Saturday with a high of 56 tomorrow, 69 on Saturday. Sunshine returns there in Nebraska on Sunday, and they'll be that way through about midweek with highs in that upper 60s to low 70s. Their lows in the low 40s to upper 50s through the time period. One more place, Minnesota. That's the fourth largest corn producing state in the nation. Their lows, if you're looking for something a bit lower, really aren't. 45, 40, 49, 46, 47, and 54 through Tuesday of next week. A little rain today and Saturday, sunshine otherwise. However, their highs only get right to 60 degrees, so they'll stay cool through the next 4 to 5 days. And that's a look at the weather forecast for a portion of the Corn Belt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett now joins us with AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. And I think, Matt, you're in the field this afternoon. Are you cutting beans?
Yeah, we're cutting beans today. You know, we tried a little bit of corn here this week, and it was testing, 18 or so. But we didn't have a whole lot of fields that didn't have a decent amount of replant. So we decided to stay on the bean routine, at least for now. We're cutting all 12-13% beans, so they're just right. We're hoping we can maybe get back into some corn next week, and hopefully it'll be under 20.
Are they cutting pretty well?
Yeah, they're actually cutting pretty good. We've got some leaves on the beans we're cutting right now, there's a butter bean here and there, but the ones that are ready are biting hard as can be. It's a situation where they're testing just fine.
What do you think about the marketplace for the day?
Well, it's been a good week. I mean, obviously, yesterday wasn't the greatest. And then, today was just kind of all over the place, back and forth. And, a little bit up, a little bit of down. But in the grand scheme of things, you didn't settle off too far there for soybeans, up just a little on corn. I just want to keep in the back of my mind how good of a week it's been overall, though, because it sure has been a blessing to be able to come in here and add the kind of value that we've seen, going into harvest here.
I've got about 30 seconds left. Is that enough to make a sale on corn or soybeans?
Well, as I always say, it depends on the individual and if they can make it work. But, this corn basis is awful good, and I don't expect it to stay this way, especially on any further rally. So, I'm not so sure I wouldn't maybe be a little more inclined to sell some corn. Beans, I'm probably going to put in the bin. There's awfully good carry in the bean market, and I think there's an opportunity to make some money there.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. Comes to us from the Combine Cab on this Thursday afternoon. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. The money that comes to operate the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week comes in part from you, our listeners. And you really do make a difference. About 40%, frankly, of the whole operating budget of Illinois Public Media is listener donated. And if you don't call in with your support for agriculture, it makes a difference. There's a place there on the willpledge.org website where you can put in support of agriculture, or if you dial at 217-244-9455 and tell them in support of agriculture, they'll make note of it there. It's important that you do this, and you should do it right now because this is the last day of our fall fund drive. We only do this a couple of times a year, and sure would like you to donate. $120 is great, less is fine, more is fantastic. What we do want to make sure happens is that when you do donate at 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org, that you say in support of agriculture.